Hi. Thank you so much. As I welcome all investors and analysts to the call, I hope and pray that all of you and your near and dear ones are safe in this challenging environment. It gives me a lot of pleasure that despite the challenging external environment, the bank has been able to report excellent performance on the financial and non-financial front. Let me begin by highlighting the initiative that the bank has undertaken towards vaccination, which is the biggest need of the hour. We, in association with Network 18, launched India's biggest vaccination drive on World Health Day at the Tari border. The bank would adopt 5 districts, namely Amritsar, Indore, Nasik, Guntur, and Dakshin Kannada, and run vaccination drives in these districts. As we care for the society at large, bank has also rolled out various HR initiatives to ensure the health and mental peace of employees. Also, in the quarter gone by, various awards and accolades came our way. The bank was adjudged as the best and fastest growing bank in the mid-size category by Business Today, KPMG. Shyam was adjudged as Business Standard Banker of the Year by an eminent jury. Employees are the biggest strength of the bank, and the very first time when bank decided to participate in the Great Place to Work survey, we were selected as one. Bank also won awards for digital initiatives, and it was a reflection of our mantra, digital at the fore, human at the core. On the financial front, you would have noticed that Q4 was one of the best in terms of performance. The bank recorded its highest ever quarterly net profit, which stood at rupees 478 crore and grew by 15.9% on a YOY basis. This was driven by NII that grew by 17% on a YOY basis, despite 9% growth in advances, and by strong performance on the core fee income, which came in at its highest ever level of rupees 363 crore. NIM improved by 19 basis points to 3.23%. The strong operating performance helped the bank report ROA of 1.02% and ROE of 12.2%. The bank's board also recommended dividends of 35%, that is 70 paisa per equity share on face value of rupees 2. The bank strengthened its provision coverage from 53.39% to 65.14%. Consequently, net NPA came down to 1.19%, which places us amongst the best in the industry. The bank also crossed milestone figure of 3 lakh crore in terms of total business. With the quick snapshot of our performance, I'd like to hand over the mic to Shyam for his opening comments. Many of the senior team members are also on the call and would answer any questions that you may have. Over to Shyam.
Thank you very much, Anand. And I want to make sure and request everybody, I hope everybody is safe and dealing with the challenges in the best manner possible. As a bank, like any other good organization, we have done our very best to make sure that our employees are both safe and continue to work with reasonable comfort. We've had good success on that count. It's been a tough year, no less for anybody else. And we believe that in the context of that, our financial performance for FY21 would rank as one of our stronger years. And that sort of gives us the confidence and inspiration to make sure that despite the raging pandemic, despite the current scenario, we believe FY22 should also mimic or hopefully even better as things shape up better at the second half of this financial year. I'll just cast our mind back to February 2020, just before the breakout of this intense challenge we have all lived through, when we had our first sort of formal analyst day and we had shared some of our objectives, our roadmap and our aspirations going into 21, 22, 23. Unfortunately, some of them did get stymied or delayed, and I'm happy despite the headwinds, we did end up FY21 more or less along committed lines, and that was quite a prudent choice of products. Wise use of conserving and using capital more sensibly and not rushing to raise money just because some of availability was there. I am quite proud that we probably rank as the only bank that increased our capital ratio without having to go to the market, and we stood strong on our choice of not having to raise till we are absolutely required to. And I do think that the strategy has paid out, and with that confidence, the board has also recommended the issuance of a dividend going into FY21 as the results of FY21. I'm not going into the numbers. I thought I'd just give you a headline of the choices we made in terms of capital conservation, in terms of business mix, in terms of being prudent in our credit portfolio. Our gross and net are clearly in the top league of banks, and I'm proud that our strategy over many years of being quite conservative and not doing some swashbuckling, hitting 1 year and then doing a mess up next year has held out, and I want to believe that strategy should survive and sustain the bank going into FY22, which looks like an arduous year, at least at the start. The view we have of Q1 and Q2, and I'll only speak of the immediate quarters because the long-term aspiration and desire of the bank remains intact. Near term, there will be challenges. It's quite uncertain what Q1 will look like. But we are looking through or looking beyond just one or two quarters. Our momentum is strong. We have recast our senior roles and positions of seniors to make sure it's more sharper and very business-focused, rather client-focused. So we've got two senior people looking at the business side of it. We've just recruited Venkat, who joined us as our CFO effective today. Venkat has a remarkable pedigree, comes from great past experience as a financial controller. Ashutosh steps on to do other activities in terms of running his portfolio on treasury credit and importantly, the ESG initiative of the bank. So between Ashutosh, Shalini, Venkat, Harsh, the senior combined, alongside our HR, compliance and other seniors, we have now got a formidable senior team looking out into FY22 to honor both the commitments we've made for ourselves and our statements that we've put out in terms of aspirations for the bank and the business as we go ahead on seeking to be the first choice bank. On no count, we are behind on any of those commitments. The aspiration to build a granular, well-diversified portfolio is turning out quite well. You would have seen our CASA growth has been amongst top quartile growth. Our liability franchise is very granular at 90%. Our credit costs have been well contained. Our provisioning strategy from being almost 46% at the beginning of calendar 20 is now at 65%. Every 100 basis points is about 40 crores. So we've added well north of 700 crores of extra provision in FY21 for the same level of slippages of the previous year. You know, much was made about the deteriorating portfolio and the environment. Not that we belittle that. We believe that our portfolio will withstand, and I'm happy as we exit FY21, our coverage has moved up to 65% and without any technical write-off, with technical write-off well into 78, and we remain well provisioned. Our capital adequacy is meaningful, and our strategy going into FY22, like I said, is to granularize, focus heavily on digital. We've had good success on digital. Launched the new initiatives that we had held back in FY21, namely the credit card launch. Staff launch has gone well. Our digital, completely three-click digital offering, our credit card, there's no hand touch, there's no paper, absolutely no paper. There's no bank that can claim even close to that. And our client launch is about fortnight to 3 weeks away from now for existing customers. New to bank will be a little later. So we are positioned to enter FY22 in arguably one of the toughest times with a reasonably good portfolio, well-capitalized, with an armory of good products, a well-commissioned senior team. And we think, notwithstanding the immediate challenges of COVID and its associate issues, associate challenges, the bank should continue on the path of ROA expansion, which we've seen it cross 1% in Q4, and all going well, we should be able to keep that momentum into FY22. So I just park these as the opening remarks. As always, myself, the entire senior team is on the call. Those of you who've been following us, you know that there's a very wide range of seniors who chip in with their inputs. So I'll open it up for questions between Ashutosh, Shalini, me, Harsh, Anand, Damodaran, and the full team will be able to, Babu will be able to answer questions. So let me just turn it over to everybody for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Alok Sanghvi from VT Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for the opportunity and hope all well at your end. So I have three questions. My first question is on the provisioning front. So just wanted to clarify, since we have used up all our COVID provisioning, there is no substantial stack of non-specific provision left on the book, if I'm right.
Except for what is restructured standard, we have got 10% provision for the restructured portfolio.
Right. So, sir, if I just look at the kind of asset numbers and the kind of environment we are going into, we have almost a 1.2% NPA. We have a 1% kind of restructuring on which you mentioned that we can expect 30-40% slippages going into next year. And obviously, there's some SMA book as well. And the environment that we are going into, it's pretty challenging. So just wanted to understand the thought process around not making extra provision this quarter, because this is unlike what we have seen across the sector, where people have chose to go into it extra provision going into COVID too. So that's my first question. My second question is if you could share the SMA number, SMA 012 number as of March end. And my third question is on the color, if you could give some color on the restructuring book. So that's it.
Sure. I'll give you the philosophy of provisioning. I'm sure Anand will give you the numbers. So the approach has been we must remain well provisioned, and our team, I've been guiding all of last year, we would make sure that it's between 60 and 65% provision coverage. So our belief is that that will continue. So, you know, and we have a sense of the book that we have. Ours is a largely secured book. We don't carry much of an unsecured portfolio. And like I mentioned, given the experience of LGD, even through even through the current period, we believe at a 65% provision coverage, we will remain quite intact and safe. So on the margin, whenever we see slippages, we will be able to provide at 65%. And whether it's sitting in the standard asset and shifting from that to the credit cost, or we make provisions in the as we think shaping up, it is the same. So we decided we will make sure that our coverage ratio remains at 65 or better, and that's how we will continue to do. And the experience for that is from about 14, 15 months back when we were at 46%. The environment was different. We said our loss given default at that time was about 38%. We always hold about 10% more than the LGD. And when we said the COVID-related impact can go to 50, we carried 60% provision. Now we are saying if that continues, maybe at 55, we will still hold 65% coverage ratio. That's how we are working on. And therefore, our belief is that as we go into FY22, that will be the kind of momentum that we see. In terms of specific SMA and restructure, maybe Anand can give you more color.
On the SMA, as you would have noticed in the presentation, a collection efficiency is reported as 95%, which means that the SMA number is sub 5%, and which is actually at 4.6%. And on the restructuring, sorry, can you just repeat the question?
So I just wanted to get a sense of the color of restructuring, where the majority of restructuring has come from.
That also is in the
investor deck.
Sure.
Yeah, on the restructuring, as we have discussed, almost 68-70% of the receipt was fully backed by securities, and it is a fully backed by these mortgages. So we don't find any challenge on this one. And then secondly, on the unsecured portion on the restructured book is hardly 6% of the total unsecured book. That is together education loan and some personal loans. So on the restructured book, we are even when we discuss, it is a little more than 1%. We are very strong on our asset quality side, and we are sure to recover. And one point, incidentally, I was just hearing, maybe on that, the pages from the restructured may go a little higher. It is not the position. The demand from the restructured book this financial year, FY22, is less than 15%. And we have already come out with a very strategic production program for that. And we started engaging with certain borrowers on that right from the beginning. And we don't find any challenge on the collection from even on the restructured book. With the demand side, it may be less than 15%.
So just one clarification. So the SMA number of 4.6%, this was 2.5% last quarter, if I'm not wrong, for Q3 FY21.
No, this is SMA 012 put together.
Last quarter also collection efficiency was 95%. Sorry, Babu sir,
yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, what Anand says number is correct. It was less than 5% even in the last quarter. And we consistently maintain that position even during this COVID period. December, March, this March also we maintain the same S&M position. Uh-huh. And our collection efficiency is a little more than 98%, even though the debt we said it is 98%.
Oh. Understood, sir. That's it from my end. Thank you so much.
I may further add.
Arko Nananda.
Your book.
Others who are not speaking, please mute yourself.
Okay.
Please mute yourself, whoever that is.
Hello. So what I was saying is that restructured book, which is about 1% of the total loan book, within that, a good chunk, as Babu has shared, is of secured assets, mostly mortgages and all, where traditionally we have the least LGD, sometimes in a single digit, you know, some quarters when we run our model or so, it's in single digit. So even if, you know, in the worst possible scenario of slippages and all in that, wherein the, as per IRAC norms, you are required to, you know, classify, that is what Shyam was referring to, 30% or so and all that, we still would have the expected loss to be quite low. It could be in single digit. That's what is important to know, you know, in that RB structured book is not of unsecured loans. Thank you.
Understood, sir. Right, understood. Thank you so much and all the very best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Monal Sultan from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, this is Mona Khetan. My first question is on your NBFC and HFC exposure, which totals to about 13% of total advances. Could you give some color, because it's been one of the key contributors of your corporate growth in the recent past. So in terms of the quality of book and share of accounts that are rated BB and below within this NBFC HFC pool?
I don't think it's increased or lowered. It's been the same for as long as I can remember. We've been between 12 to 15% on NBFC HFC. And I've always said our NBFC HFC is as good as you can get in the market. They are gold standard in terms of the, and it's unfair to pick names, but they are on the, I don't think there will be anybody below AA. Anand or Harsh can input.
Yeah, that's right, Shyam, Harsh. The percentage of AA and more is majority of the book. In fact, about 85% of the book, if I recall right. That's number one. Number two, most of the NBFC MFI, which we have been having, they have adequately capitalized themselves also, and we have been doing stress testing on the portfolio, and we see no signs of stress over there at all.
Sure. My next question was around one of these large infra accounts that had recently in the last quarter from a pro forma perspective. And you'd highlighted that a resolution or repayment is expected soon. So is that factored in this quarter's movement of NPA?
Yes, that is 312 crores you see in the pro forma slippage that continues. That's why the number is that 1,665 includes that.
Okay, so upgrades and recoveries of 100 and something, that includes the upgrade of this account as well?
This account is yet not resolved. It's still an NPA with
okay.
The 25% provision made.
Okay, got it. And lastly, on collection efficiency, so you've mentioned 95% number for March. How has that behaved in April and May, if you could share some insights?
I would request not to give too much weightage on April and May. I mean, we have to be honest, right? It's not normal. Things are, there is a lockdown, and therefore it's unlikely to change dramatically. So real picture will emerge only in June quarter, the month of June. And that's hoping that May end, most of the lockdowns are unlocked and some kind of normal, I won't say normalcy, some kind of limping back to order will appear. Signs are that it will. So June will be a frantic month, which will be more representative of how things will be. Q1 will have challenges, but you know that's what the opportunity to either restructure or Babu's plans of working with customers to solve are something that we are hopeful of, but I would wait to make that comment on how it is. Certainly April, May will be 88%, 89%, 90% kind of thing. Would that be right, Babu?
Right, sir. It is 89%, 90%. In April, it was 91%, and in May, we are yet to complete. Almost there.
Additionally, I would add there, you know, I think the situation was worse last year, April, May. In fact, there was more uncertainty. We didn't know, I mean, the system didn't know at all, you know, what exactly is going to be the damage and all. And thankfully, you know, as the situation got opened, you know, after 5 months, the recovery was very, very fast. And that shown even in recovery and upgradation of the NPL accounts. So I think this year, people know little more about this pandemic than they knew last year. So my point is, you know, I mean, it has to be seen in that context. So yes, April and May have their challenges. April and the beginning of May, you know, did see the challenge because of non-movement, lockdown and all. So even, you know, meeting the clients or even, you know, contacting them is a challenge.
Got it. That's pretty helpful. And lastly, on gold loans, so you've seen a very strong growth in this fiscal. How do you see that, in the following year, especially given that LTVs from here on have to come down? And also, where does this gold book lie? How much is part of agri, if you could help us with that data?
May I?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So, gold loan, I think the total book is nearly 16,000 crores, which is roughly 11.85% of our total loan book. A good chunk of that, you know, it's quite equitably distributed. We have about more than one third in retail gold loan, good chunk in agri gold loan, and the MSME gold loans and all. So this is how the breakup is. Yes, LTV, you know, that special prescription of 90% is over on 31st March, and therefore there would be a stagnation for some time when the rollovers and other things come. But as, you know, I mean, it would be a function of how the gold price in rupee terms moves. It would have its impact. We had 70% YOY growth. Part of it certainly was contributed by the higher gold price per gram. So therefore, higher eligibility. But in tonnage terms also, we monitor our gold loan book in tonnage as well. And in tonnage also, it has been, upside of something like 30% plus or so. So I think tonnage is growing. Tonnage is continuing to grow even after, 31st March or so. Value-wise, of course, you will have some stagnation coming in. That would also be a function of how dollar rupee behaves. So if rupee appreciates, then you'll have a lower rupee cost of gold and all. But if dollar rupee goes up, means rupee depreciates and all, then I think that in all likelihood, once again, you'll have a higher per gram price. Global, dollar price of gold is more or less, after seeing the bottom of around 1700 or so, has come back. It's already crossed $1,800 per troy ounce. So let's see. I think it would be function of that. I'm sure, we would register because it's a good business to do. But probably the 70% type of growth on a very high base may not be, possible to be repeated. So 30-40% type of growth is something which we definitely would be targeting.
I hope I have replied to all your queries.
Sure. I think that was pretty helpful. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Good afternoon and congratulations on good results.
Thank you.
A few questions. Firstly, was loan growth in the quarter a little back-ended, as despite adjusting for interest reversals, the NII looks slightly softer? So can we expect NII growth and margins to recover further during the coming quarters?
May I? Yes, please.
Yeah, so I think over quarter three, if we are comparing NII, please. It's something we can't do, anything about, but just for statistical calculation, the year which when we have, February of 28 days, it has 2 days lesser than quarter three. So quarter three has 92 days and quarter four this year had 90 days. per day, NII is roughly 16 crores. So when you compare with previous quarter, you will find, you know, at least 30, 32 crores is lost only on account of that. Even if you compare it with last year, same quarter, last year was a leap year, so you had 29 days in February. So that also, I mean, on base also, you had something, you know, higher one as compared to this year. But that's one part. Apart from that, there had been interest on interest refund, which had to be, you know, given. So on interest side, we had these two things which need to be seen, you know, when we compare NII.
Okay.
That said, it is true that March saw the maximum growth.
Okay, sir. And secondly, like our cost of deposit is now 4.7. Now, as I see, our SAR rate is lower than what the other larger banks offer at 2.5 for us. And the TD rates are also quite comparable. So, is there like, what is the cost of our TD that we have at the portfolio level? And what sort of repricing we are looking at? Because our cost of deposits are still like 70 odd basis points higher, despite these facts, like on the SAR and TD that I mentioned. So what sort of like decline are we looking at in our deposit cost? And what is our TD cost at the portfolio level?
TD cost is north of 540, if I'm mistaken, because it's a term deposit. So some of these deposits are for 3 years, original maturity. Of course, majority of these are 1 year, and some special buckets we had created, 390 days or something like that, to put it, you know, for ALM purposes, to have more than 1 year or so. So I think as the repricing happens on maturity, you will see fall in TD rates. If the same interest rate scenario continues. So that's on TD. We have, you know, about two-thirds of our total deposits in TD book. One-third only is in CASA form. And traditionally, our CA had been not that strong as some of our peers who you are comparing with. Yes, saving has been our strength, and saving has been going. But despite that, our CASA growth had been 26% this year. And CA also has seen a respectable growth. So, but overall, you know, base-wise also, CA had been contributing a very lower, you know, 5% in total deposits, this thing. So that's the case. But yeah, going forward, assuming that, you know, cost of deposits will go down is quite reasonable. I think as and when the maturities happen, the new repricing renewals and all would be happening at a lower rate.
Okay. So just to like extend this further, so like with 540 sort of TD cost, our portfolio deposit cost should be lower than what it is. Like, is it that the non-retail deposits are relatively higher in costs?
No, not exactly, because we have very little, wholesale deposits. CDs are there, but as on date when I'm speaking to you, my weighted average cost of CD is less than 3.50. Less than 3.5. Of course, balance also is very low now. Hardly, you know, less than 2,000 crores or so. So wholesale deposits have not brought in that type of cost to us, but yeah, certainly some refinances at fixed rate and all taken some 3 years back or so, which have remaining maturity of 2-3 years, are at a slightly higher cost, some even at 7% or so, but they are gradually being repaid and all. So that's it. I mean, that's not much of a contributor to total cost of funds. So I think cost of funds should go down with repricing of TD rates.
Okay. And lastly, like we have reported a 33 basis point decline in loan yields, even as the retail deposits, the gold loans, these have been doing phenomenally well. So is it possible to like give some color on the how the retail yields and wholesale yields have moved? Because 33 basis point sequentially is quite a sharp decline.
So retail yields have gone up certainly because of gold loan on one hand. On the other hand, corporate portfolio yields have come down because of the market situation. You know, you have so much liquidity in the system, and corporates getting CPs. I mean, the ones which are banking with us, who we are holding in our book, and all are AAA, AA, all those, including those NBFCs, HFCs, which Shyam was referring to. Shyam and Harsh were referring to. So naturally, you have to, remain in the market, you have to quote those rates and all. So that's there, you know. Certainly there is you know, a fall in yield going by the market in the wholesale portfolio. Retail has been holding up, and good contribution has come from gold in that, you know. So that's the breakup of you know, yield on advances. Business banking also has done fairly well. There also, you know, yields are richer.
Okay. Thanks so much, sir. And best wishes.
That's the reason for, you know, NIM improving, you know, overall.
Right.
That's so much. 3.23.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Renish Bhuva from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, and congrats on a great set of numbers. So sir, first question again on the asset quality side. I mean, of course, you know, we can't comment on the near-term outlook, but if I have to look at the whole year FY22, the way we have navigated FY21, you know, with the pre-gross NPA of 3.4 and credit cost around 1.2. So it is, I mean, looking at the current customer behavior of, let's say, first 45 days of the second wave, is it fair to assume that the FY22 will be better than FY21 in terms of asset quality?
Ganesh, I think the way we should look at this is three parts. One is our internal portfolio quality, second is our capability, and the third is the environment. On one and two, we believe we have a good grip. The environment is certainly not in anybody's control. We have to make sure that we are able to surmount the environment. If things don't deteriorate dramatically from here on, and the worst is where we are, I think it's safe to assume that our credit cost should be where it is or better. Now, for any reason this gets prolonged and the consequences are dire, we may have to factor for it. So that's why I'm giving a guidance that when required, we'll step up our coverage. We will not fall below 65%. Provision coverage. That should give us a sense of how the year shapes up. Every quarter, we'll be able to take assessment of that.
Got it. So, So maybe if things have to remain, you know, where it is and should not worsen from the current level, and considering the PCR, you know, already at a desired level, so credit cost should be lower than FY21 level, right? I mean, ethically speaking.
Unless for any reason we choose to increase our coverage.
Got it. Okay. And so secondly, on this digital strategy, okay, so now we have almost, you know, 50% plus partners, or more than 80% of the transactions are, or when the customer onboarding is happening via digitally, you know, where cost of acquisition will be significantly lower. So where do you see the cost to income ratio settling? I mean, of course, we have been highlighting that it should be around 50%. But now, you know, looking at the PPT and the development which we have seen in FY21, it looks like we are done with the investment. So what's your comment on that? I mean, do you expect the operating leverage playing out from FY22, or you still feel there is some pockets we still need to invest?
I think our cost income, I've always said, somewhere in the late 40s, you know, below 50. I think FY21 full year was 49.6. We think that will improve by another 100 basis points in FY22, 150 basis points, and that's what we are working towards. Our approach for many years, not just one or two, for 6 years has been branch-light distribution heavy, and we set the digital journey 6 years back, and we are seeing rich dividends on it. But must remind ourselves, there is an element of cost, which I always keep saying, it is unfortunately pension-related, and that's beginning to taper off only the following financial year. But hopefully with yields being where it is and doesn't see much volatility, hopefully we are well provisioned.
Got it. And so just last question from my side on this this data analytics and cross-sell, you know, so in PPT we have said that we have almost 37 lakh merchants active on Bharat Pay network, you know, which is almost 20-25% of the PTM merchant network. What is the strategy to use this merchant base? I mean, what is the cross-sell or upsell strategy, to leverage this huge customer base?
Yeah, Shalini, do you want to jump in on that?
Sure, thanks. So I think in terms of the Bharat Pay relationship, obviously it's a relationship we've nurtured from, it's about 8 months now and has grown to the size that you have seen over there. The opportunity that lies within this space is primarily around what can we do with alternate data scoring, because traditional data scoring for credit purposes using bureaus, et cetera, do not work in this kind of an environment and in this kind of a population. So what we're working with BharatPay on is, given this merchant, given the kind of throughputs we're seeing, given the size of the kind of transactions that they do, the volume of transactions they do, the kind of transactions they do, what are the alternate data scoring engines that we can develop based on which the lending platforms can open up. So the immediate opportunity would be, and not immediate as in the next few months, but over the next year, we develop algorithms and scoring that can help us to lend to these merchants. The lending will be in a completely digital form because really cost has to be kept at a very, very low level. And, you know, will be kind of quick tenor loans that can be turned around very quickly. So that's one of the key opportunities we see. The merchant categories that we have various categories in it, obviously. It's not one kind of, platform, common kind of characteristic of the merchant. There are certain top end of the merchants to whom we've started looking at cross-selling things like insurance, etc. So lending, insurance, all of these will get opened up, but we need to build the history of the transactions over the next couple of months and build these algorithms in Rhenish. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, I mean, within 6 months, you believe that platform will be ready to start cross-selling, maybe at a smaller base, but...
At a smaller pace, we will take it. We will also look at how the environment is shaping up and then look at it. But yes, over the next 6 to 12 months, we will do that. Yeah.
But just as a thumb rule, Rhenish, for much of what we do, the underlying guideline has to be we want to keep our credit costs and credit quality as good as the top 3-4 players in the country, which we are. So I will reemphasize that anything we do will be within that framework. Because some of these digital lending looks attractive at a point in time and then turns to a problem. So we've been hyper-watchful, though we have the capability.
Oh, got it. Okay, sir. I think I have a few more, but we'll take it offline. Yeah.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much, sir.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akash Raichand, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Congratulations on the good set of numbers. I hope everything's okay at everyone's end. I had 3 questions, sir. Firstly, if we see that the credit costs seem little elevated given the current depressed interest rate environment, the credit costs seem little elevated. Any thoughts around the same, and what is the guidance for the coming 2 quarters or so?
No, are you saying the credit costs look elevated in the sense that
in the particular quarter? Yeah. So in your presentation.
No, but this quarter is bound to be, right? Because for the last 3 quarters, there has been no credit cost. So everything is lumped into this quarter. See, the one thing about the quirk of FY21 financials is like it's all in 1-3 months, you're packing in 12 months of slippages and everything. So to that extent, please look at it in a longer horizon. I think at 120 basis points, Federal Bank's credit cost is probably in the best league of banks in the country.
Okay, and going ahead, how do you...
I mentioned at the beginning of the call, right? Hard to make a prediction, but we will ensure that our coverage ratio doesn't fall below 65.
Okay. Second question is on any capital raising plans going ahead in the next couple of quarters?
I can't quite say a couple of quarters. In FY22, we see there is a potential to do one. Last year, when everybody was talking about a clamor for capital, I had steadfastly said we are well capitalized and we are growing by, retained earnings. This year, we believe, if we look out every 4-year cycle, we look at capital raise. Last time, we did in June 17. So we believe in somewhere in the calendar 21, there may be an opportunity, but we are not putting a date to it. We are going to the shareholder to renew the approval they had given last year. We will hope to get that approval to be in position to raise money.
Okay. And so finally, last question on the CASA guidance. We've seen that, banks are improving. So on the CASA front, any strategies going ahead or any guidance in terms of capturing the CASA share?
We have moved smartly. We are close to 34. We grow by not paying money, but by doing service and quality. I believe that journey will continue. We'd like to take it to 35 and better, but not by paying more, but by serving better.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ajit Kumar from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thanks for this opportunity. Sir, on some of the new initiatives that you had planned earlier, while you have given update on credit card, any update on CV business as well, how it is shaping up, what would be the size of CV portfolio now, and how do you plan to grow there? And next, on the MFI side as well, are you still looking for growth in that particular segment?
You are right in pointing out we had made four observations as our sort of new opportunities. One was credit card, two was CV. One was, of course, strengthening our business banking and microfinance. CV, we have created a good team. I did mention almost on every call in the last 1 year. The book is about 1,000 crores, all organically grown by our team. We are being quite careful about trading into that segment given all that's happening. So in the course of FY21, we do have bigger ambitions. By FY22, we have bigger ambitions, but I am saying we will watch out for one or two quarters more before we step up the gas on that. One is demand. Second is we have to be not catch a falling knife. So we are quite watchful. Similarly, on microfinance, aspiration continues. We are looking out a few opportunities maybe in the market, but I would be cautious till at least one quarter of FY22 goes by and we understand the dynamics better. Every day we hear and see different experiences, so we wouldn't make a transaction now. But we would be remain interested, but organically, slowly we our digital capabilities have fully matured now. So organically, we will step up in segments that we feel that have potential. Both these businesses, CV and microfinance, are roughly about 1,000 crores and 300 crores, the microfinance business, and 1,000 crores is the CV business. We think has potential to grow in a nice manner over the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay. And sir, on breakup between retail and wholesale, you had earlier given guidance of 55-45 mix. I think we have already reached there. So do you think share of retail should go up further from this level, or within retail, share of high-yield segments like credit card, CVC will go up, keeping wholesale book share intact?
I think the 55-45 mix is something that we'll keep. Not that we are, sort of married to it. If it becomes 56-44 or otherwise, we won't collapse. But within the two portfolios, the margin expansion is the objective. So Harsh is looking at his business model and looking at where there are opportunities in wholesale. So commercial banking gets a fillip, and we are seeing good traction. Likewise, Shalini is looking at the retail franchise to see where there are opportunities. So things like credit card, personal loan, digital capabilities are some of those initiatives, and that's what we are working on.
Okay. And sir, in restructuring...
business banking too.
Okay. And sir, in restructuring done in retail segment, you had highlighted in earlier call that NR contributes around 30%. How is that book holding up now?
Like Babu mentioned in the beginning, the restructuring portfolio as of now is doing well. The demand for this year is only about 15%. That looks okay. Early to tell how they are performing. We will factor in a higher share because mere fact that somebody is restructured suggests that there is a demand for easing up. So if the assumptions made in easing up would be a more conducive operating environment, if that were to be challenged, you should see some stress. Hopefully the stress is not significant that will create a problem. But yeah, we have to be watchful.
Okay, okay. And sir, lastly, sir, could you please give out the numbers for disbursement done under ECLGS?
Totally about, grand total is close to 3,000 crores. Babu, Anand, am I right? Anand? ECL book?
Yeah, yes, sir. Around 3,000 crores.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kaushik Podal from CV Capital. Please go ahead.
This thing, the net interest income, so can we expect, you have talked about 30 crore being the loss because of this 2 days being less and another 25 crore for that provision for
interest.
Yeah. So if those things be there, so do you expect a substantial growth in the next quarter on the net interest income front from this quarter?
Yeah, we are. We've seen 17% Y on Y growth on a 9% credit growth. So
okay.
That's suggestive of the shift in margin mix in the portfolio. We think that will continue, and so therefore the interest income growth should mirror that, Kaushik.
So we can take a ballpark figure of 17 to 20%.
Yeah, 15 and above.
Okay, fine.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vaibhav Bajaria from Athena Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for providing the opportunity. Just a correction. I'm from HNI Investment. We always see Federal Bank as a conservative bank, and history also proves that given our ability to manage NPAs. But on the contrary, when we see your aspiration on growing in microfinance book, on trying to do some acquisitions there, both of these things doesn't go together. So is it that our desire to grow ROE is forcing us to take some of the risk and move up on the risk curve? How should we understand this aggression?
I don't know how you define aggression. Rahul Dravid hit sixes also, right? He was the most balanced batsman. So you have to pick the shots you want to hit. So we believe that time when it comes, that's why I said we are interested. I never said we are committed to a transaction. So when the time is right, we will pick. In every segment, I believe, you can't write off a segment or anything. Every segment has opportunities which are at the premium end. So we will pick that. We may trade off volume for margin, which has been a choice. Even when we grew corporate, we traded off volume versus margin, because I believe in risk-adjusted margin rather than just margin in itself. So we will grow MFI. I think it's an attractive business, just the way we grew gold. We will pick MFI. We will build it to 3,000 to 5,000 crores over a period of time, but hopefully not take indiscreet choices of making growth for the sake of growth. I think the underlying text we want to hope to live up to is we won't do things for the sake of growth. That's a philosophy which we've lived with for 10 plus years and hopefully forever.
Okay, sir. Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanjay Kumar from iThought PMS. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So my question is quite long-term and around ROE. So our share of corporate and housing loans has gone up from, say, 45% to 55%. And due to pricing pressure in these two products, this has kind of impacted our NIM's ROE. Yes, our risk-weighted asset book is around 55-57%, whereas peers are around or even more than 60%. But even on a risk-adjusted basis, we are at 1% ROE, peers are at 2x. Why I'm asking is, this is because despite 10x, 12x leverage, we're still on the lower side of ROE. So first half of last decade, we were at 14%, 15% ROE. So two parts to this. Are we leaving money on the table in our existing products? And will this change? And second is, will the high-yielding retail products move our ROE trajectory back towards, say, 13, 14%?
I think in some part I answered that in the earlier question, but I'll just repeat myself. Ours is a journey. If some of you followed us, when it was 0.76% ROA, we said over a 5-year period will be 0.76, 0.88, 1, 1.12, 1.25. We are bang in the middle of that, you know, at the pandemic period, at about 1% ROA. And that's been steady, granular, structured. No one-off wacko growth or doing stuff which we can't live up to. With that, our model, we will hit. We don't mimic to be the next big bank which will magically change the needle. Ours is a structured, steady progress, but hopefully sustainable. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but we must be leaving some money behind, but I hope that's what we're learning every year to do better.
May I add on this ROA thing?
Go ahead, Ashish.
So when we look at ROA, I think we should look at the off-balance sheet items also, which do not appear in the denominator. You know, when you calculate ROA, you take assets which are there on the balance sheet, not off the balance sheet. Now, there are banks which have reasonably good liquidity. There are banks which run their CD ratios closer to, say, 85-90%, and some even more than 100% or so. So for them, I think it's all the more necessary to look at the opportunities which are non-fund based. I mean to say, letters of credit, bank guarantees and all that.
These are also working capital financing instruments, but they don't come on the balance sheet. However, the income earned on that, commission on LCBG, goes to the numerator when you calculate ROA. So I think it's better to compare, you know, I mean, ROA numbers also with this in mind as to how much of the credit exposures are off the balance sheet. We have a very small negligible amount of, you know, about 12% of our total credit exposure in the form of non-fund based. I understand few banks have more than 100%. So that also is the model. When you have liquidity, you have granular sort of, you know, deposit base and all. You look at providing fund-based facilities rather than non-fund-based. I hope I have tried to, you know, answer this, but I'm not saying we have the richest ROA and all that. This is just for sake of comparison. When you said 2X, you know, some banks having 2X and all. And that also depends at times, you know, what type of unsecured portfolio you are running and what type of products you are doing. Yeah, some banks have a very large unsecured portfolio, seasoned, very well managed. So no questions on that. And that provides the kicker. So that could be, you know, that is one of the reasons why we are also, you know, I mean, looking at credit card type of products and all gradually.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That helps.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanav Tendulkar from Bear Enterprise. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks a lot and congratulations for a great set of numbers in the tough situation. Sir, I just have one question about employee expenses. Now that we have stabilized at 525 crore, this has a one-time gratuity adjustment of 30 crore and same was the last quarter. So if we just adjust that, then this number could be around 480-490 crores next quarter. And then we have a salary hike YOY, then we can get a salary expense or total employee expense, which is less than or equal to this year in FY22. Is that calculation right? So this year we have around 2,033 crores of employee expenses, and next year it could be around the same or below because there were many pension adjustments, et cetera, in this year. So am I right in projecting this?
Subject to yields, Pranav, you are right.
Oh. Okay. So if yields don't go down, then we will have a equal or less of employee expenses.
Yeah, in that zone. Yes, you are right.
Right. Oh, and the last question from my side is just this credit card. Are we facing any operational or any other bottleneck in launching credit card and getting it on a commercial level?
No, we are phasing it out. I don't want to be courageous and do, you know, 1 lakh cards and open to new to market without seasoning. Just like we've done our personal loans, we've built about 2,000 crores digitally done. Even through the pandemic, even through the current environment, the least restructuring, least credit cost is in our personal loan book, which is counterintuitive because of the quality of the book we have. And I would like to build our personal credit card book like that.
Perfect. So also, you had outlined three categories of debit card users in last call. There was, So is there any category of cards that you are seeing in credit card also?
Yes.
So there was Celesta, there was Imperio, and there was Crown.
We have three brands, three variants in the card. Launched will be for three different segments, Signet, Imperia, and Celesta. Three different categories of customers who are being targeted. Once we are out in the public with the cards. So right now it's about 10,000 employees have signed up. About 2 weeks of usage is going on. By early June, we will do it for existing customers. We identified a large base of existing customers whom we can cross-sell to. So when we come out with our Q1, we'll give you the first update.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jay Mundra from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Maybe you had hinted about this, but in terms of, sir, your unsecured, I mean, first the digital personal loan, now you have been growing in a calibrated manner, but this probably could be a reasonable kicker to the ROA, you know, because as someone had said that we have a decent amount of, you know, prime home loan and maybe prime corporate. Over a 2-3 years view, I mean, what could be the, let's say, loan book share of personal loan, and if you can comment on the credit card also. That is the question number one.
Yeah, we think our unsecured retail, which today is only 2,000 crores on the 130,000 crores, on an increased credit book, can go over a 2-year period to close to about 7,500 to 8,000 crores.
7,000
crores over the next 2-2.5 financial years. Yeah, I'm being calibrated because we don't know how this year is going to shape up, so we'll have to be a little watchful.
Right. So now coming to the credit card, this business, if I understand it right, it would require a bit of a heavy upfront investment, and maybe for the next 2 years, until and unless it reaches a critical mass, probably it would not even break even. So when you say your cost to income would continue to decline, you have of course factored that in. Is that the understanding, right? Because, or you think that this can break even much earlier? Hello.
Yes, Mr. Mundra, you may go ahead.
I think the question, I don't know if Shyam has got dropped off. Anand?
Yes, just give me a minute, ma'am.
What is the question, Mr. Mundra? Can you repeat?
The question? Ashutosh, the question was, while we wait for Shyam to come back, the question was, a credit card requires a significant investment, and therefore, has that also been factored in while looking at the forward-looking view on cost-income ratio? Has that been factored in, if I were to summarize the question?
Yes, from finance side, I would say confirm, yes, it has been factored, and the rest of it, Shalini, you can take over.
Yes, I think, yes, to corroborate what Ashutosh is saying, yes, we have definitely factored that in. We also, we've gone in with a model which is a hosted model with Fiserv, one of the most, prominent entities in the credit card space, both hosted model for both the technology and the operational side of things. So in that sense, it's a much, much more, it's lighter from an investment perspective. It is more variable in nature, scale up as we scale up. So that's the relationship with Fiserv and the model we've adopted, along with the fact that we've taken other costs into account, factored that in, as Ashutosh says. So both these put together, I think we can give you that comfort here.
Yeah.
Hello.
Thanks, Shalini. Ma'am, are you looking at a slow and calibrated pace in credit card as well? Or
yes.
Or you think, you can reach, maybe 2-3 years, you can try to scale up rapidly there?
I'll pick that up.
Yes.
In the year one, between, say, we are now in June 21, for the next 12 months, a greater part of the next 12 months, is existing customers cross-sell. We have a large base of existing customers identified who qualify for pre-approved programs. So principal focus will be that. And while the numbers will be meaningful, it's not going to change the dynamic of the market. But it will be a meaningful increase. With the confidence we get after that, and hopefully the world is a better place to live in 12 months from now, with more salaried jobs and everything in place, we'll go to new to market. So it's not a product which will overnight change the texture of our P&L, but it will something that keep adding up to everything we do.
Yes, sir. And the last thing, sir, from my side, if you can comment on the Fed Finance potential value unlocking or value monetization on that part.
The company is doing extremely well. You may have seen it in our consolidated financials. The numbers are there. They're doing well. And we believe that there is good potential. But timing for such initiatives will depend on many things. First, there is no roadmap on when. but in the course of the next 2 years, there's a good chance.
Thank you, sir, and all this.
The company is doing very well. The quality of team, quality of performance is exceptional.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anand Bhavnani from Bido Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So with regard to credit card business, since we earlier did co-branded cards, is it fair to say that the learnings there should help us, you know, accelerate the, you know, launching of our own cards? And if you can give us some sense of what percentage of our existing clients, which you said you have identified, to be eligible, what's the approximate percentage, and in what time period do you anticipate to kind of get them the card?
Client base is 1 crore. At least 10% are eligible. How many take up depends on the marketing, keep paying. So over a period of time, we'll keep working on them. Sure, that's the answer.
Sure. And sir, in microfinance, you mentioned that the broad's plan is to kind of build a book of around 3,000 crore in due course. Have you kind of identified any specific geographies which you want to concentrate on or you want to avoid when you kind of build this business?
We believe in the initial phase, we would like a south base, Tamil Nadu, Karnataka, Kerala, south, principally south and west.
Sure. And sir, with regard to the, you know, cross-sell for our existing bank customers, in terms of life insurance, how many of our, you know, potential bank customers would be eligible for a life insurance, and how many we have been successfully able to cross-sell the federal bank life insurance, you know, policy? If you can give some color.
Situation is improving nicely. Last year, AGS Federal grew almost 40% plus, entirely driven by our performance because the other partner was not there. AGS Federal is doing well, driven by our performance, and that momentum will continue. But percentage-wise, I'm not sure about it, but it's improving and growing quite well.
Sure, but the way you identified maybe 10% of our 1 crore customers potentially eligible, maybe in life insurance it could be 50-60% of our 1 crore customers.
I think in life insurance we also look at it as a percentage of the cost, savings balance, so we track much of the savings balance percentage keep growing, and that's something, it's one of our KPIs for our retail team which they're working on.
Sure, I'll come back to you for additional questions.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhaval Gada.
Yeah, hi, Sam. So, a couple of questions. First is on the credit card. Just want to understand in last, let's say, 3 to 5 years, how many cards we would have sourced for SBI cards. So, just trying to get the sort of potential from the network right now. And the second question was, could you provide the yields for the corporate book, retail book, and the SME and agri book? That would be very useful. Thanks.
The cards of SBI is nothing to write home about. That's why we decided that that model is suboptimal, which is why we decided we would do our own. We had certain assumptions in doing the SBI cards one. Personally, I'm a big user of it. I find it good, but somehow penetration has been low. So now we are looking at our own proposition. So, you know, it's sub 1 lakh, so really not much meaning. I think it's close to 1 lakh. On the yields, Anand, maybe you can talk about it.
Yeah, for the quarter, the yields were 9% on retail, 9% plus. On agri, it was closer to 10%. On business banking also, it was closer to 10%. PB was closer to 9%. And on CIB was closer to 7%.
CIB is corporate.
Yeah.
And just a follow-up on the cards. So basically, I mean, would you have some analysis on the existing 1 crore customer base? How many people have a credit card? Any sort of data mining that we've done to assess the opportunity?
Yeah, like I mentioned, the pre-approvable base is about 10% plus based on very stringent criteria initially, and that's the universe we'll go after.
Understood. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pritesh Bum from Prabhudas Leeladhar. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, sir. Good evening. Just one question. I wanted to know how much is the book on EBLR and MCLR?
Sorry, how much is the book on?
EBLR, external benchmark linked rates, sir, and MCLR.
Oh, okay. Anand?
Nearly one-third each.
One-third of the overall book?
Yeah.
And the EVLR would have also
that number Anand can provide. I'm just giving you an estimate.
Yeah, external benchmark is around 32%, which is very close to what Mr. Kajuria mentioned as one-third.
And similar is MCLR as well, isn't it?
MCLR is slightly short of that.
MCLR
okay.
Less than 30,
28%.
Yeah.
36,000 crores or something like that.
Yeah.
60% between external benchmark and MCLR.
Okay. And if I can also ask, what would be the fixed rate book in our overall book?
That would be also closer to 32%.
32%. Okay, and one thing more, I was seeing this the corporate book rating and others. So there is a substantial fall in the others rating. It's a very small book, of course, but it's moved in two quarters down. So anything there, we could see a 1% type of a slippage from that side. The internal Federal Bank rating, it's fallen to about 72%. So we have a segment in the corporate rating.
Nothing in particular in that. So I think it is also maybe, you know, a smaller portion is coming out of it. So maybe 1 or 2 percentage points can move easily here and there.
Okay. So, thanks.
Operator, we should keep in mind we're running to have 5:45, so we should try and bring it to a close with two, three questions.
Sure, sir. The next question is from the line of Ashish Kumar from Infinity Alternative. Please go ahead.
Thank you and congrats for a good set of numbers. Shyam, just to understand, we had earlier we had a glide path on the path on the ROA, which we had suspended because of COVID. Would it be fair to say that glide path would come back again now? Large portion of the COVID issue.
I do want to say yes, but I'm only putting a rider saying, let's see how the current situation sort of shapes up. But yes, that's the journey we are pushing on. Yeah? Hello?
Hello. Can we budget in? Can we pencil in a 1.1 to 1.15% ROA as exit run rate for this year?
Allow us till quarter one end to get a better gauge on the situation. But yes, that's what we are pushing hard. That's our internal pressure. We will see how things go. I mean, we are hopeful that this current situation passes quite soon.
If we are out of COVID, you know, I think the major concern out of COVID, you know, say by first half of the year and all, then probably what you are saying is quite likely. Exit, you said, no?
Exit, yeah.
Quite likely. I mean, that is subject to, of course, a big rider is how COVID external conditions, particularly on this side, you know, pandemic side, you know, shape up.
And in terms of leverage, we've been running at 12 to 13x leverage. So we can assume that again. So we would be hitting a 14-15% ROE in that case.
I mean, yeah.
On new capital.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saket Kapoor from Kapoor & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for the opportunity and congratulations on a very good set, a tidy set of numbers. Sir, if we take the segment results and and see the comparative numbers versus March. Since it is very early, but then also, sir, how is this segment reporting going to shape up going forward in the coming year? Because I think so the treasury has contributed a lot to the bottom line. So how is the book positioned, and what should we be penciling in terms of the segment reporting going forward, sir?
I think treasury, if you see over last 10 years, there would be a consistency. You know, it's not too much skewed in a particular year, barring last year's last quarter when we had some investment, one-time investment related profit of about 180 odd crores or so. Other than that, I think it has been more like every year-wise, if you see, it's more or less, of course, rising, but that is pro rata to the total, profit of the bank and all. So treasury's contribution is more or less in same proportion, and it's retaining that. In case the yields suddenly, go up and all, then probably there would be a challenge to this particular thing. But then this is the reason why, we are looking at the other core fee opportunities, including the third-party sale and all those things, and which are coming up quite fast and quite well. So that is it, I think. In segmental reporting, we have the retail, wholesale, and treasury. So I think retail is would gradually expected to, take that load from treasury over a period of time. If I have understood your question correctly and answered, this is what you wanted?
Yes, sir. I was just looking out how the segment reporting is going to shape up there, since the base for treasury has moved up substantially from March 20 to 21, from 384 crore reporting to 722 crores. So on a higher base and depending the yields remaining in a range and inflation picking up also. So how is this going? This segment going to report? That was my question.
To answer that, if the yields suddenly go up and all, probably the repeat of that would not be possible. But then that would then be looked at from other components. And this is where the growth in gold loan, growth in business banking, growth in, certain other retail segments is being focused at and is being, pushed. So I understand what you are coming from. Yeah, I mean, this year had been, conducive as far as the softness in yields is concerned because of the ample liquidity in the system and all. So, yes, that. But if you see over 10-year period, you will not find, too much of a gap in treasury's growth rate, more or less steady.
And sir, if we look from the investors' point of view, the minority shareholders, we find now our bank money trading at one time book. So at these valuations also, sir, what are the factors, sir, that will contribute to value creations for your investors going forward? What are the steps that have been taken and the results we are going to expect going forward? What is in the anvil as for your minority shareholders?
So responding there, we'll ask you about it.
I was going to say the same thing. We can only perform. We cannot influence the share price. Arguably one of the finest performing institutions. Much as many may disagree or some may disagree, we have not stinted from performing, and we'll continue to do. Portfolio quality is robust, deposit franchise is rich, and the credibility of management is impeccable, and I don't think you can ask for better governance. So if these are the four drivers of a good franchise, we score well on that. So right. We will see. I don't think it will be very far before we catch up.
Right. And on your tenure, sir, any updates?
It's an overnight job.
Yes, sir. It's
an overnight job by the shareholders, right? If they decide overnight, it will switch.
Shyam, you didn't hear the second question. It's about your tenure.
Sorry, I didn't hear. What is
it? Yes, sir. It's about your update on your tenure, sir. When are we going to hear?
I wish I had an answer. The application is with RBI. The board is met in regular touch with RBI. Okay. So this term ends on September 22nd. I'm sure we will hear. But the bank has a plan A, plan B well in place for that.
Okay, sir. And last point was about this line item 1C, sir, wherein we find that the interest on balances with Reserve Bank and other interbank has gone down on a quarter-on-quarter basis, whereas for the year, it has tripled from 140 crore to a 368 crore base. So how should we be penciling it going forward? Shall I repeat, sir? Hello?
Yeah, please repeat.
Sir, I was talking about item 1C, wherein the interest on bank with Reserve Bank and other interbank funds, the figure has gone down quarter on quarter from 114 crore to 66 crore. And whereas for the year as a whole, it has gone up from 140 crore to 368 crore. So just wanted to understand the factors that contributed to these variations in the numbers, and going forward, what should we look what factors will influence this number?
These have nothing, no much significance. This is just money market operations. If the bank is running a very high liquidity, it would be lender in the market, would be lending in interbank market or so, and therefore would earn interest on that. When bank turns, you know, or decides to have, you know, lesser liquidity available with it by deploying it elsewhere, then it becomes borrowed. So when it becomes an interbank market, you know, like issuance of CDs and all those things, you know, are part of that. Basically, this is a money market operation, because on Reserve Bank of India, we don't get anything, you know. These are CRR funds. CRR funds, RBI doesn't pay any interest for last so many years. Earlier, they used to pay above 3% minimum, but now they don't pay anything. So that column may read it, that interest on RBI, you know, balances with RBI, but it's not balances with RBI, balances with other banks and all. That's the one which appears there. So that is it. So it's just a money market operation. Please, I mean, it's nothing to do with it. That depends on, you know, which side of the liquidity you are in. What is the choice made and all? Are you deploying the same liquidity in AAA corporates by investing in CPs or subscribing to NCDs or providing them loans at very competitive rates? That's a choice. Or you have the treasury funds available with treasury, which are deployed on a sometimes daily basis, sometimes on a very short term basis. I hope I have answered your question.
Right. And last point was on the dividend part, sir. I may just conclude. Sir, since the SEBI has come up with this idea about dividend distribution policy, so does the banks also falls under the purview of the same? And what are the factors that made the bank result in a dividend payout of 35%? And what is the dividend distribution policy for us, sir?
See, if Shyam, would you like to respond or should I?
Go ahead.
I'll add to it. So basically, you know, our bank has a consistent track record of dividend payment, barring last year, which was barred by the regulator. So we have been consistently paying dividend. If I recollect, even in, no year after 2000, at least I recollect, after 2000, there has not been a single year when bank has not paid dividend. So that's one part of the track record, you know, barring last year. Second is, of course, looking at your capital adequacy. What type of capital adequacy do you have? Plus, our regulator is quite conservative that way. They already, you know, last year they did not allow anybody to pay. This year they said, you know, if you come under that category, because there is a matrix, if you look at the RBI circular, how much NNPA do you have, what is your CRAR, and what is your track record of profits and all, based on that. You fall under, you know, different categories, 40% payout, 35% payout, and so on and so forth. We consistently have been falling under that category, 35%. And, you know, this year, 50% of that can be paid, because 50% is the cap, maximum. So that comes out to something like 17.5% payout ratio. What our board has recommended to shareholders is half of that. So basically, we are paying half of what we are eligible to pay as maximum. Half has been done by the regulator, and another half has been done by us to, you know,
retain some, you know, profits, you know, little higher level of profits. At the same time, do not disappoint the vast majority of retail shareholders and all. So this is a sort of balance, you know, which board has considered and accordingly, you know, went ahead with recommending this dividend, 35%, 70 paisa per share. Sham, you would like to add anything to that?
I agree with you. I think the essence is balance between preserving capital and giving returns to shareholders, particularly those who have been long-term shareholders.
Yeah. Thank you for the answer, sir, and all the best to the team and stay safe.
I think we should bring this to a close, Anand.
Sure, sir. I would like to hand the conference over to Mr. Anand Chok for closing comments. Over to you all.
Thank you so much. I think it's been a pretty long call that we have had. Thanks for being patiently with us. Have a great day ahead and the rest of the year as well. Thank you.
Thank you and stay safe, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Stay safe. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you. On behalf-